Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Since the storm, it seems like everybody just moved on. In America, especially during disaster, black children are not even a thought.
Have you ever, like, talked about this before?
No, I haven't.
Why are you dead?
I don't know. Nobody asked me.
Hurricane Katrina caused one of the biggest disbursements of black people in history.
After losing so much, why wouldn't anyone ask if we were okay?
That is an excerpt from the HBO documentary Katrina Babies. Filmmaker and New Orleans native Edward Buckles Jr. shares a conversation with us where we hear the voices of the children of Hurricane Katrina, all of them now young adults. Well, joining me to talk about the film is Edward Buckles Jr. And if you have a comment or a question about the film or Hurricane Katrina, give us a call. Lines are open right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Buckles, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm super happy to be here.
Oh, and I'm so happy to have you here. I will tell you that congratulations, first of all, for this film, which debuts actually on HBO tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm really looking forward to seeing this documentary, but it has to be bittersweet because this is a tough topic. To talk about. It is personal for you, and it is a wound on the heart of this country that still hasn't healed for a lot of people. Talk to me about why you termed this film, you called this film Katrina Babies. How would you describe Katrina Babies?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, you know, just kind of piggybacking off of what you just said, you know, it is bittersweet, right? Because, you know, I think that the hardest thing about making this film is the fact that it's so true, right? And, you know, in the ideal world, you know, someone who experienced, you know, Hurricane Katrina wouldn't have to make a film to try to heal from Hurricane Katrina, right? So, yes, it's bittersweet for sure. I mean, you know, I would define a Katrina baby as anyone who was a child during the storm. You know, as far as the film goes, our youngest person, you know, who survived Hurricane Katrina was 3, and our oldest person was 21. And I consider both of them Katrina babies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it difficult to find them?
Honestly, no. And that was the most surprising part when I first decided to make this film. And when I first decided to go out to my community, you know, honestly, I went on Facebook and I made a caption. And you know, at first I thought that, you know, it was going to be almost impossible to get, you know, people my age to open up about something that's serious. But as soon as I made the post, it was just, it was nearly 100 people who wanted to share their stories. And, you know, I found that just validating because, you know, I thought that, you know, these were things that we just didn't want to talk about, but it seemed like the children did.
What was it that made you want to make this film? What was the genesis of it for you?
Yeah, well, you know, I was 13 years old during Hurricane Katrina, and you know that storm changed my life. That storm changed my family dynamic. It stole my childhood, and it also stole my identity. Right. So, you know, if you take that, and then if you pair it with growing up in this post Katrina New Orleans, where you know crime is rising, where education is failing, where it is just not a great place to be as a kid, and you know. Once I guess, became an artist, and like once I really got into storytelling, you know, this was just a story that was a no-brainer for me. You know, something that really bothered me about growing up in New Orleans was that, you know, their children were getting into a lot of trouble, you know, including myself. You know, we had a lot of access to trouble. And, you know, I just found it, you know, bizarre that we were being blamed for the trauma that was surfacing. And no one seems to ever be making parallels about, okay, maybe Hurricane Katrina has something, you know, to do with this. You know, everybody just blamed the kids. Everybody just, you know, called us bad. And they called us, you know, in some cases, criminals, you know. And I just didn't think that that was fair. I mean, we faced Hurricane Katrina head on. And, of course, you know, trauma is going to surface if it's unaddressed. So, you know, and in plain, I just simply wanted to draw parallels, honestly, to the adults. And, you know, to the press of why, you know, we can't just blame, you know, us for how our trauma was surfacing in New Orleans.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I'm talking to filmmaker Edward Buckles Jr. He has produced a new film, a documentary, which will premiere tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on HBO. It's called Katrina Babies. It is about the youngest survivors of Hurricane Katrina 17 years ago. The anniversary is August 29th, as a matter of fact. That's coming up within a week or so. And we're taking a look at kind of the conversations that he has put together in this film and looking back at what happened as well as looking forward to the healing process. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You said that Hurricane Katrina stole your identity. Explain that, please.
Well, in New Orleans, you know, upon greeting somebody in New Orleans, you know, one of the first questions they ask is, you know, they are asked who your people is, right?
Uh-huh.
and you know, for those, you know, that don't understand that they're basically just asking, you know, what family do you come from? You know, who is your family members? Who are your parents? You know, who are your grandparents? What's your last name, right? And family has everything to do with neighborhoods as well, because, like, you know, certain families belong, you know, to certain neighborhoods. So, you know, family is really one of our biggest, you know, our biggest joys in New Orleans. So just personally speaking, you know, Hurricane Katrina made it to where, you know, some of the people in my family who I was closest with and, you know, I would consider the rock of my family, they were never able to move back after Hurricane Katrina. You know, even in 2022, they're still displaced. You know, so what does that do to a kid, you know, who is used to having his family and used to having his tribe, you know, used to having, you know, his go-to community, mm-hmm. right? And then when you come back after Hurricane Katrina and it's no longer there, but what is there is the streets. What is there is, you know, temptation. What is there is negative influence. So, you know, I would definitely consider the years that I grew up in the post-Katrina New Orleans, you know, I made, like, a lot of mistakes, and it was because I was lost, and it was because I didn't have my identity. And, you know, as I look at the kids today even, you know, I taught high school for 5 years. Yeah, and one of the most incredible things that I learned about them was just the effect that none of them had no idea where they came from. And that is very uncommon in New Orleans. You know, in New Orleans, we rep our city, we rep our hoods, you know, like it's, you know, we wear our neighborhoods literally, you know, on our shirts or literally in our skin, you know? So it was just incredible to see how many of my students didn't know anything about their neighborhoods or, you know, or no longer stayed in the neighborhoods in which their families were from or even, you know, where I guess they were born. So, you know, I just think that we are dealing with like a bunch of identity issues when it comes to young people in New Orleans. And, you know, if you don't know who you are, how do you know where you're going, right? And I just think that Hurricane Katrina has a lot to do with that.
You know, some people would argue that now New Orleans, because so many black people were scattered to the wind after Katrina, that New Orleans isn't what it used to be, that it has an identity issue. Wow. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll say this. The old New Orleans is gone. You know, the real New Orleans, as we call it, it's gone because some of the people didn't come back. You know, some of the more physical things were definitely washed away. But I do have to say that, you know, as long as black people are in New Orleans, you know, New Orleans will be a black city. You know, like we are still there, not all of us, but the old New Orleans is definitely gone. But yes, I would definitely agree that, you know, because of the fact that New Orleans is changing so much, you know, and because of the fact that so many people, black people in New Orleans, are being displaced within New Orleans, right? You know, we're being shifted out of our neighborhoods because of gentrification and because of, you know, business, right? So yes, it's definitely fair to say that there is a larger identity crisis happening within our city.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the new documentary, Katrina Babies. It has a conversation about some of the youngest survivors of Hurricane Katrina 17 years ago. All of them now young adults. I'm talking to the filmmaker and the director, Edward Buckles Jr. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. Let's go to Alan calling from Maryland. Alan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening to both of you gentlemen. I'm the father of a daughter who just got her doctorate in the mental health field, forensic science. And I'm just wondering, and through stories I've heard from her, what, if any, professional services, mental health, detox, however you want to label it, were offered the citizens of New Orleans either by the city, the county, the parish, or the state? What, if any?
Yeah.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Go right ahead, Edward.
Yeah. You know, that's part of the storyline in Katrina Babies. You know, as I was making this film, there was this through line that kind of occurred, you know, while interviewing my peers, and it was that no one has ever asked me that, or I've never spoken about that before. And they meant that in both, you know, when it came to personal engagement and when it came to, I guess, professional help, if you will. I know, personally speaking, I didn't receive any therapy or any counseling after the storm. And I know a bunch of other children, most of the young people in my film have never received any help on that level after the storm. In fact, you know, there was a big budget cut for mental health in New Orleans right after the storm, which was wildly weird to me. So, you know, I think that that's one of the problems, and like that's one of the things that I'm actually trying to stress in this film, is that, you know, it's really unfair that, you know, at that age, you know, experiencing Hurricane Katrina at such a young age, and us not being equipped or prepared to deal with the trauma that will surface at some point, you know, in our lives. And, you know, I don't think that it's too late, but I do think that there was a missed opportunity when it came to, you know, helping us with wellness and mental health.
Interesting. I have a couple of minutes before I go to a quick break, but I did want to ask you, you were 13 when Hurricane Katrina struck. What do you remember?
Yeah, so it's interesting because a lot of us, we remember the, you know, the actual storm and that whole process in spots. Like, it's very hard to, like, you know, tell it verbatim because of the fact that I learned that, you know, it's a trauma response, right? But what I do, what I can, you know, gather is, you know, I remember not taking Hurricane Katrina serious. You know, like most of the people in my city, adults and children, we were used to hurricane season,
yeah,
right? We were used to these false alarms every year where, you know, we'll go run to the grocery store and buy candles and, you know, buy like all these groceries, and then nothing would happen, right? And, you know, that happened my entire childhood. So we didn't really take it serious. And, you know, my mom, you know, she had been watching the news a lot. And, like, she's very, very spiritual on top of that. So, you know, she's hearing how the mayor and how, you know, the weather people are talking about this storm. And then she said that she got a sign from God, like, paired with that. And, you know, she was like, yo, you know, I think that we should evacuate. And my dad didn't want no problem, so we evacuated, you know. You know, so you know what's interesting is that still then, you know, as a child, I still wasn't taking it serious. You know, my sisters and I, we were just like, oh, cool, you know, another vacation. You know, we're missing school. And it wasn't until, you know, we pulled into this very weird flea market turned shelter, and we had to sleep on the floor with, like, all of these strangers. And the next morning, when we woke up, there was like news crews there, like multiple news crews there, you know, standing over us literally as we were sleeping. And they also had a television out that had the news on it, and all of the adults were, you know, standing around it. And, you know, some of them were crying, some of them were, you know, just like literally stuck.
Well, hold that point, because I've got to take a real short break. Absolutely. And I'll let you come back, because I'm fascinated by this story. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back with a preview of the new HBO documentary Katrina Babies in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the new HBO documentary, Katrina Babies. It premieres tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. Our guest is filmmaker Edward Buckles Jr. The film about the youngest survivors of Hurricane Katrina 17 years ago. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Mr. Buckles, continue with the story. You said you woke up and there were news reporters everywhere. Sometimes we get on people's nerves, but I understand the point.
Yeah, you know, we woke up and there was just a bunch of local news crews there. And, you know, I walked up to this group of adults who, you know, who were surrounding this television, and some of them were crying, some of them seemed stuck. And then once I got through the crowd, I realized that they were showing images of New Orleans just underwater. Mm. And once I saw that, and I was just like, oh, this is not just any other hurricane season. And, you know, I definitely remember vividly seeing that Circle Food Store was underwater. And Circle Food Store is the grocery store in which my cousins, you know, my cousins live in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that's when everything just became real for me.
Yeah. When, you know, after the levees broke and you know, the big debate, of course, has been, you know, it wasn't so much the hurricane, but it was the breaking of the levees that, yep, that caused so much destruction as well as loss of life in Hurricane Katrina. More than 1,500 people in New Orleans died. Yep. And in, you know, that entire region, you know, South Alabama, Southern Mississippi, more than 1,800 people lost their lives. But then there was this huge exodus. And I think, you know, that brings us back to, I think, the heart of this film. Here at, you know, Howard University, we saw what we call the Katrina 400, who came to Howard University to go to school. Some of them were coming from Xavier. They came from Dillard. And others were already on their, you know, their way here, but it was pretty much a one-way trip because they had nothing to go back to, this radio station and this community. Had a huge outpouring, everything from, you know, money and clothes and blankets and the like. Talk to me about the community outpouring on one hand, welcoming people who really had nowhere to go, but not everyone was always welcomed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, first of all, thank you. And, you know, thank you, Howard University, for, you know, taking us in, like, at that point. You know, I think that it's very important that we, you know, I spent a lot of time talking about, you know, people who didn't do the right thing and you know, what people didn't do. So I definitely want to, you know, show that love to y'all and, you know, express gratitude on behalf of my people, you know. So thank you for that. And, you know, I'm a fellow, you know, Dillard University graduate myself.
Well, there
so
you
I definitely
go.
Appreciate it. But yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know. When I got to Lafayette after the storm, I remember I just kind of disappeared. When my mom first registered us, you know, for school, I was very resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, I didn't want to accept that I had to go to school in this new place. And when I got to the school, you know, I remember being received well, mainly because I played football. So, you know, it was kind of easy for me to, you know, fit in. But I just remember just kind of shutting down. And, you know, I remember all of the weird stares. I remember all of the weird notions and the weird questions, you know. I also, you know, didn't know at the time that my sister, who was going to a different school, she was being treated with racism, you know. Which is why she left earlier and came back home with my father earlier than I did. You know, and, you know, I've just heard many different stories about, you know, people who were received well and then, you know, people who weren't. But I think that at the end of the day, what's really important is that, you know, we understand that no matter how these children and, you know, our people were like received, it was still one of the toughest times, like, you know, ever for them. And, you know, I just think that, you know, what's interesting is that it was mainly, you know, people, like everyday people who were, you know, accepting us and, like, making us feel welcome. But, you know, to address the question that the caller just asked, where were the people who were supposed to be helping us with mental health? Where were the people who were supposed to be, you know, making sure that once this trauma surfaced, you know, we would know how to handle it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely appreciate everybody who you know, accepted us and, you know, showed that love for sure. And I just definitely ask, you know, for, I guess, accountability when it comes to those, you know, who weren't there but were supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Melissa calling from Waldorf. Melissa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, Harold.
Hey, how are you?
When Katrina happened, I was sitting at home, watched it on TV, and I just started crying, and I picked up a pen, and I wrote a poem.
Hmm.
And it's a short poem, so I'm going to read it. It's titled Maybe God. Maybe God wanted us to be able to tell each other apart. Made one race light and the other one dark. Maybe didn't think we'd get caught up in that part. Thought we'd deal with each other like we have a heart. Maybe thought we'd be able to come up with a resolution without resulting in a revolution. Thought we'd be able to treat each other fairly without referring back to the Constitution. Why do we forget to deal with each other like we have a heart? Maybe God truly wants us to remember that part.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it. It's been 17 years now, Melissa, when you reflect on how you were feeling then and still, you know, kind of, you know, have an opportunity to look at, you know, where we are now with New Orleans, with the Katrina babies who are now adults. Briefly share your thoughts with me.
Just to hear them speak about how they were forgotten is heartbreaking, you know. And it's like when I was watching it on the news, I felt that. Just watching on the news immediately after it happened. I mean, when you see people on buildings, and I'm like, are we in the United States of America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like I was looking at something that was going on in a third world country. Yeah. I'm like, we have military people that have boats and ships and planes and dropping food. We drop food all over the world. But, you know, I just cried. And I just picked up my pen and this is what I wrote.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate the phone call. Mr. Buckles, talk to me about some of the people that you interviewed for the documentary. Who may have, you know, touched you or struck you the most in talking about looking back 17 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I have to give so much love and so much, you know, just a big shout out to all of the community and all of the, you know, family and friends who are, you know, who are in this documentary. You know, it feels weird calling them subjects. It feels weird calling them cast because they are really family and friends. You know, mm-hmm. mostly everybody in this project is someone who I know personally. So that kind of made the process not easier, but it made them trust me more. You know, it made them more vulnerable. It made me more vulnerable, right? You know, so that was like a barrier that we didn't have to deal with, because most of the time when it comes to, you know, filmmaking, especially with documentaries, you know, when you're telling a story that's that traumatic and when you're telling, you know, that much of your life, you always have to wonder what are the intentions of, you know, of the film team, right? So, you know, it just made it so much easier that all of us were, you know, friends and our family, and that they trusted me, you know, with their stories. I think that, you know, a few of the people who have touched me and changed my journey I'll start with Maisha. Maisha Williams is a close friend of mine. But she and I both went to Dillard University. And when I interviewed her, it was the first time that, first of all, anybody in my film cried, right? It was the first time that, you know, I found out that I wasn't the only one who had ever, like, who had never spoken about this. And when that happened, it gave me some validation on why I was on this journey. It gave me some validation of why, you know, I was telling this story, because, you know, we got to remember that I was young when I started making this film. And, you know, to start making this film at such a young age, it takes like a lot of strength. You know, it's a lot of weight that I'm carrying. I'm carrying the whole city. I'm carrying, you know, Hurricane Katrina, you know. So, you know, when she told me that no one had, well, also, I want to throw in there that I was hearing, you know, I was hearing whispers and, you know, I was hearing things like, oh, you know, no one wants to talk about Hurricane Katrina anymore. Like, all those stories have been told. So when Maisha tells me, yeah, I talked about that, and then I asked her why, and she says, because no one ever asked me something quick. I was like, I was like, wait, so how can we be done talking about Hurricane Katrina? How can Hurricane Katrina be over? How can New Orleans be rebuilt if no one ever even attempted to talk to the children? So she was somebody definitely who impacted my journey big time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyone else surprise you with what they shared with you?
Yes, my students. My students for sure. When I started teaching high school, I didn't know why I was there. I never planned to be a high school teacher. You know, my plan was to leave Dillard University and you know, work on films and, you know, like become famous. You know,
right?
that was my goal. You know, and you know, work on, like, you know, movie sets and stuff like that. But I got a call from a, you know, high school teacher, and this was right when I first started making this film. Like, it was literally weeks after. And I got a call from my high school principal, actually, and she was offering me a job to teach media at her high school. And, you know, at first I was resistant. I was like, I don't want to be a teacher, like, you know, whatever. So I still took the interview, though. And as soon as I took the interview, I realized that this school was in a similar neighborhood that, you know, I grew up in. It was actually in a neighborhood that I spent much time in my youth. And it was actually one of the neighborhoods that, you know, that a lot of trouble was happening during my youth. And then I started to see students that looked just like me and looked just like my peers. So, and like that sold me. And literally as soon as school started on the first day, I realized why I was there, and it was nothing but fate. And I was there because these were also the Katrina babies, you know? These were also the although some of them were not even born during the storm, and or some of them were very, very young, they were being impacted in a whole different way by Hurricane Katrina than I was. You know, they were dealing with the long-term effect of how trauma was surfacing from Hurricane Katrina. And, you know, once I put the camera on them, and, like, you know, once I saw how eager they were to share, that definitely shocked me. And, like, that gave me courage and that gave me strength. In fact, me seeing everything that they were dealing with brought me back to my childhood, and it made me recognize my own trauma.
Mm-hmm. You said that your family moved to Lafayette, Louisiana. Did your family stay there, or did they go back?
Yeah, we stayed there for about 8 months. Again, my sister left because she was having problems at school, and she left with my father because my father had been called back to work. But I was playing football, so I stayed longer with my mom, and we just stayed, you know, in a motel, and we finished up the football season. So I stayed there for about 8 months.
And then you all moved back to New Orleans?
Yes, we moved back to New Orleans.
How was that?
It was scary. I mean, you know, as soon as we got there, like, lights were, first of all, there were no lights. You know, there were no street lights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything was turned off. There was this insane curfew in effect. There were National Guards driving around. You know, I didn't see the normal characters of New Orleans and the normal people of New Orleans, right? You know, I didn't see the elders on the porch talking and, like, you know, speaking to us. I didn't see the children running in the streets. I didn't see my family. I didn't see my family's home. You know, so it was a bit scary to come back to that. You know, honestly, I wouldn't doubt if I probably didn't even want to, you know, come back. You know, I probably was like, yo, like, take me back to Lafayette, because, like, this is scary. Like, it's a horror movie, you know?
Yeah. You know, I remember the last time I was in New Orleans, I went in 2009. And one of the things that happened while I was there that still bothers me to this day is that, you know, in the Lower Ninth Ward, you know, there's this acres and acres of vacant lots where houses once stood, overgrown grass and the bit. Now, you know, as a news person, you know, my curiosity was up and I wanted to see it. And, you know, the way things were at that time, some 4 years later. But instead of figuring out how to get there myself, I went on a tour. And to this day, the fact that tours were held in areas where people once made their livelihoods, their homes, where kids played, where the elders sat on the porches, where they played, you know, stickball, and, you know, and where the kitchens were rolling and making all of the wonderful traditional, you know, dishes, and, you know, where really was the heart of the Black community, was now a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about that and the curiosity that was engendered by so many people who came to New Orleans after Katrina?
Well, look, I mean, in the film, in Katrina Babies, in which people will see tomorrow, you know, I make a statement and I say New Orleans was not ready to receive all of us, but they needed their workers to come back so that tourism industry could come back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that it was very irresponsible to, you know, have this, you know, I remember on the news, and like, this is also in the film, you know, there's a reporter, and like, he's saying New Orleans is open for business. And when we saw that, when my mom saw that, and when my father saw that, we're like, okay, we can go back home. You know, we can go back home. And it was very irresponsible because when we got home, you know, I told you what I just saw, and it didn't seem like New Orleans was open. So I just don't understand where the priorities were if you're going to invite if you're going to open New Orleans back up, but when the natives get back, it's not, you know, it's not ready for us. So I can only ask, who are you opening it up for, right? Mm-hmm. You know, who was it for? Because, like, it clearly wasn't for us. Like, for example, you know, there's a young lady. Her name is Damaris Collier, and she's in my film, another good friend of mine. And she saw, you know, that same ad that said, segment. I mean, it was kind of like an ad, though, you know. But, like, she saw that, and she rushed back home because she wanted to finish school in New Orleans, right? She wanted to graduate in New Orleans. So, like, she came back, and she stayed in a FEMA trailer that had formaldehyde poison in it, you know? And that was all because the city is rushing people to come back so that we could rebuild economically. But here you are putting people in danger, and now Damaris is dealing with all type of illnesses, you know, because of living in that trailer that she was given because the city told her that she can move back.
You talk in the film a lot about the emotional pain, the damage to, you know, the Black community. What does healing look like in your mind for the Katrina babies?
Yeah, it's been a very beautiful last couple of days. You know, I just left New Orleans where we did our local screening. And, you know, we had, you know, thousands of people come out, you know, and our support throughout the weekend. And it's just been such a powerful, you know, response and feeling just to see New Orleans all coming together. And, you know, right now I'm feeling like I'm seeing that old New Orleans, you know, coming back as one community, and like, everybody is, you know, saying just how healing this film is, you know, and like, you know, just how healing, you know, all of the ideas and, you know, all of the conversations are, you know. But I just do have to say that this film is only a small piece of the conversation. It's only a small piece of the impact that needs to happen so that we can reach healing, you know. What I hope is that, you know, just like in this film, I learned that simply talking about your trauma, simply owning your story, simply, you know, getting it out and like not suppressing it. You know, I learned by making this film how powerful that was. Look, wellness and mental health information and you know, therapy, like, those things weren't just floating like around my neighborhood. I didn't know anything about that. So, you know, I never knew that just simply having a conversation about something could, you know, could help. You know, so I am hoping that with this film and with my platform, you know, I could offer information and like, I can offer gems, and, you know, I can, you know, create platforms so that we can heal as a people and so that we can be gentle with ourselves.
Do you feel a sense of responsibility for the process of healing for, you know, the Katrina babies, and even, you know, for yourself, and indeed, the Black community in some cases that never returned?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I've been battling and dealing with, you know, because look, I got this idea when I was 20, mm-hmm. right? I physically started making this project when I was 23, and I finished this project at age 30. I spent all of my 20s working on this project. You know, this project grew up with me, right? And it kind of raised me in the same way that I raised it. And when I was younger, and, you know, when I was, you know, 20, 23 and 24, you know, I felt this guilt and, you know, I felt this big, like, responsibility of making sure that because I was telling this story that, you know, I had to heal everybody and, you know, I had to be responsible to making sure that, you know, everybody was good, right? And, you know, like, what I'm learning right now is that, you know, while I do still have a responsibility, you know, because of the fact that, you know, as an artist, I've chosen to put my scope on this topic and on these people, I do have a responsibility, you know, to make sure that they do have the information that they need once they are re-traumatized by, you know, at the end of the day, you know, as beautiful as people think, you know, think this film is, and like as healing as people think this film is, every time somebody watches this film, you know, they are being re-traumatized, right? Especially if they went through Hurricane Katrina. So I do have a responsibility there to make sure that I am offering, you know, wellness and, like, you know, offering opportunities so that they can, you know, heal themselves. I think that when it comes to everybody, though, and, like, when it comes to the whole community, all I want to do is put the, like, you know, I want this film to serve as inspiration for everybody to go and take, you know, take care of themselves, because I spent all my 20s trying to make sure that everybody was good, and I think that impacted me in some way. So, you know, I just want to make sure that this film and, like, you know, my work can just serve as inspiration, you know, to bring the healing components down to New Orleans, and I also want to inspire my people to take advantage of it.
How do you balance telling the truth, the, you know, the difficult, painful, full-throated truth about the experience of the Katrina babies with the risk of re-traumatizing someone?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I first started interviewing people, you know, and I was teaching, my school social worker noticed something in me. You know, she noticed, well, first of all, she heard that I was working on this film, and then she noticed that, you know, as like I worked on the film more, that, you know, I was you know, changing. And, you know, she pulled me in her office one day, and, you know, she gave me both sides of this whole process. And, like, she was like, look, I think that the work that you're doing is beautiful and, like, you know, it's important and, you know, it's going to bring healing, but you have to understand that you can't just be out here, you know, interviewing people and then just leaving. And, like, and like, you know, not making sure that, you know, you are leaving them in good hands. And same goes for you. Every time you interview somebody, you are experiencing secondary trauma, right? So, you know, I think that because I was able to name those things and because I was able to learn about mental health, I just handled my filmmaking process in a much more responsible way. You know, I made sure that I wasn't just interviewing and leaving, right? You know, like a lot of directors who are not from our communities, you know, especially white directors do, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, even now, you know, like, for example, something that we did this weekend, which was very powerful, and, like, it gives me chills thinking about it. You know, when we did a guided meditation with everybody who came to the screening after. So, like, you know, after the film showed, we didn't let anybody leave the theater, and you know, we did a guided meditation, and that was just something, you know, that, like, was inspiring because, like, I've never seen my community do that with that many people. You know, it was thousands of people, and I thought that was super important. And although it is uncomfortable at first, especially if you've never done that, and, you know, you're super, super, you know, insecure and, like, you know, thinking about if, you know, if people are, you know, looking at you. But I do think that having those practices and, like, you know, being exposed to, like, that type of stuff piece by piece, you know, it can help you start to take that with you on your journey. Like, who knows, maybe those breathing exercises that we did in that theater, maybe it'll help somebody when they're having a bad day, right? So I just want to continue to, again, I am in the process of learning about wellness, learning about mental health, and, you know, getting all of the information, you know, that's out there about those things. And like, as I'm getting it, I just want to continue to share it with my community.
Real quick, the film premieres tomorrow, but as with most filmmakers, by the time we see it, they're on to the next project. What's your next project?
Honestly, that's not the case here. You know, like you are just asking me, you know, about my responsibility, and right now we are planning a impact campaign, and we are planning to, you know, take this film on tour, and, you know, also, you know, we are building, you know, wellness plans so that we can address that trauma that is surfacing in New Orleans, and, like, you know, so that we can be the ones to like, you know, make sure that we are talking to those who experienced those who experienced Katrina as children, and those who are experiencing a post-Katrina New Orleans. So, you know, I'm not done with this project yet because of the fact that, again, it's my responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
Put this film out there in the world. It's my responsibility to make sure that I am giving people the tools they need to heal.
Edward Buckles Jr., filmmaker and director of Katrina Babies. It's going to be on HBO, premiering tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern. Edward, congratulations, and keep doing the work that you're doing to heal New Orleans. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, August 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.